What's up? What's up? Hello, everybody. Man, it is so good to be back. We've had to, because of Miami, because of the holidays, haven't had a show in a minute, but coming back with the freaking banger, with the GOAT himself, with one of the people that I have been following since day freaking one, and I am so excited. I'm about to hit this go live button. So if you're listening to us on Twitter, on X, you can also go and watch us talk on video. There we go. We are streaming. Y'all, this is the first time that I'm streaming. I am
Let's
so
go.
excited about this.
Let's go.
So excited. Easy, welcome to the show. I'm gonna give an intro in a second, but I want you to say hi to everybody. Man, I could not be happier about this. I see a whole lot of new people. So I'm going to give it just a second to get everybody in here. Make sure that you are retweeting. Thank you so much for watching us, for listening, for tuning in. Y'all, if this is your first time, welcome back to another episode. Or I guess if this is your first time, welcome to completely a new episode. And if you've come back, I love you, love you, love you. This is If You Know, You Know, the show for Web3 creators and enthusiasts. I'm your host, Belle. Each week, I'm joined by Web3 experts to bring you the latest trends, opportunities, and perspectives from all of the people who are getting shit done in the space and who are shaping truly the future and technology of art. Nothing we ever say is financial advice, and it's always important to do your own research. We do the show every single Wednesday on X live streaming at 1 p.m. Eastern, well, 2 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, 1 p.m. Central Standard Time. And you can also find it on Spotify and any of your favorite streaming platforms. If You Know, You Know is powered by Tau BRC. You already know that BRCs right now is the movement. So listen up. In a second, I'm going to be pinning up a post where you can find all of the instructions available for you to be able to get today's Space Caps POAP. If you've been listening, then you know that every single week we do a special POAP called Space Caps. And for every five that you collect, you are airdropped 420 BRC tokens. So if you haven't jumped on that movement of BRC20s, make sure that you do. So, with all of that said, my goodness, Easy Eats Bodega, you are freaking killing it. This weekend was a huge weekend for Bodagos. I mean, where does it stop?
Where does it stop? I don't have an answer for you because I don't know where
It
it stops.
doesn't.
You know, it's yeah, does it is the real question. Obviously, the excitement, the euphoria, the insanity that ensued when Gordon bought one was just a surreal moment. Nick and Pio had called me, both of them, like right after. We were like, "What is going on?" Like, because some people thought we paid him, like that was hilarious. Some people thought that we knew beforehand that he was going to do this, and we had no clue. So we had reached out to him. But he followed up after he picked up the dog and was like, "Oh, I'm just seeing these DMs now. My bad." And it was like that made it even crazier because like we at first were like, "Oh shit, maybe he saw the DMs. Maybe he like," because Nick had reached out, obviously like being an ape and like had been following them and they'd followed him back a while ago. Thought there may be some overlap there, but it was just purely like he bought one. Like, and he credited it to Nick and Pio's FTX videos. He was like, "I watched those. Thought they were hilarious. Figured I wanted to back somebody like people in the space that are just doing some awesome stuff. So thanks, keep crushing it." I was like, "Damn, that's crazy!" Like it feels absolutely surreal, and it shows content is king. Like you don't realize where and how far some of that content reaches.
One of the things that I'm going to talk to you about is, and that we are going to touch on, is content because you have been, I mean, just exponentially doing as much content as you said that you were going to, honestly, you know? A really cool thing for me to be able to witness, Easy, is you coming into the space, right? We've been part of the Nifty Portal for before it was even called.
Years,
Yeah, I know,
yeah,
right?
years.
Before it was even called, shout out to the portal and to everybody there. Before it was even a group, before it was formalized, before it had a name to it. And when you started coming on the shows talking about Solana, I mean, it was like the joke of the day, you know?
Yeah, I got cooked,
You
absolutely
did.
killed for it. It was like your hamburger profits, like have fun over there. And I was doing great. Like that was the thing, was like it like made me realize too, because I've been saying it so much recently, is like the overcrowded trade. And in 2021, ETH NFTs were the overcrowded trade. You were competing against so many people. Yeah. Gas wars were insane. And I was still so early to Solana. It was before there was bots. Like, it was crazy. You had to open up multiple tabs to try to mint multiple NFTs. Like, there was no automation. It was still so foreign to so many people. And to me, that was like, oh, I realized now, like this year, that that was my going to a non-overcrowded trade. And I had even been doing it back then because, like, I'm a lover of learning. Like, I love to learn and try new things. And it was like, even with ordinals, I had gotten in fairly early to just try them. And like, I don't fully get them, but I was like, I want to just familiarize myself so I can at least talk about it and like understand what's happening. And that's always where like, I'm a learn by doing type of person. So it really panned out with Solana. When I told them, I was like, I'm going all in on Sol September 2021. They were like, why would you do that? And I was like, it just feels like a better move. Like, it just, to me, feels like it makes more sense. And I got absolutely torched. It was like, oh, you're making $30, $40, $50 here. And now Nick and Pio are all in on Solana. Like, it's hilarious to hear him every morning be like, yeah, nah, I'm back in Sol. Back in Sol. That's it. I'm buying it. Nick's like, I'm loading $1,000 clips a day. Because I've been DCAing since every single day. December 26th, during that mega space I had where Sol was $8.40 at its low, that's when I put in my first DCA buy. I was like, I'm just going to buy every day. Like, at this point, either it goes to zero or this will be the trade, my like life-changing trade. Like, there's no in-between. This is my thesis. I'm sticking with it. And it's crazy enough. It's panned out. And now we're seeing just all this excitement on Solana.
One of the things that so many people are afraid of on Solana that I still think has that bad reputation is the fact that the network was turning off, coming back on, you know, and having all of that friction, right? Right at the peak back then, of the peak of when people were jumping on it, it was like, wait a second, the transaction was just paused because the entire chain stopped working. You know, talk to us about that. How is that not relevant anymore?
Yeah, so it's funny because that hasn't been an issue since the last 10 months. The last time I had an outage was 10 months ago. And that outage, I believe, was for, I want to say, an hour and 40 minutes, mm-hmm. which still isn't great. Like, I understand that. I get the argument. I get all of it, you know. And to me, that was the thing where it was like, there's just been so much pushback, I guess you could say, you know. And people like, why would I use this? It's just going to shut down. But Solana's had some massive technological improvements that have essentially eliminated that from happening again. They rolled out what's known as priority fees. So similar to paying a high gas fee, you can now do so and actually get a transaction through smoother. That also helps with congestion of the network. When some transactions have higher priority fees, they get routed first, but still first in, first out. So if two simultaneous transactions go in, the one with a higher fee will be processed than the subsequent one, which Solana as a blockchain is built differently than Ethereum, where it's multiple interactions in a single block that all get processed simultaneously. Solana is much more like Web 2. When, if you've ever come from like sneaker flipping or trying to buy like tickets on Ticketmaster and you're spamming the buy button and it's the first person to actually get it through gets that ticket, that's much similar to what Solana is. It's a first in, first out. So once that hits, it goes through, it processes. And that's why you see so many transactions, really high throughput. And they rolled out what's called Quick, the Quick Update, C-U-I or Q-U-I-C. And that's basically created it so that it can handle those subsequent transactions and process them in a way that won't cause that congestion to turn the chain off or slow it down or cause a block to miss, which is what the issue was. You had blocks that would skip, and as soon as a block skips, the chain's out of sync. When the chain's out of sync, validators can't process it hand in hand. So the way blockchains in general work, and I know I'm going into like a ton of technical detail, you need all of these things globally to be on the same page. It's as if you were on Google and everyone's looking at the same Google page. If somebody does a change and only their page changes, everyone else is technically broken. And that's kind of what we saw, where one validator was ahead or behind. And that's what broke the chain. But because of this Quick update, it solved that. And the thing everyone's so excited for is Fire Dancer. So Fire Dancer is this thing that's created by Jump Crypto. It's an entirely second instance of Solana that's going to be running in parallel. So in theory, down the line, if one of those turns off or faces any issues, it can fail over to the other instance while that first one gets repaired. So now you have what's known as a dual instance model. And what that means is much more similar to, I want to say, like Amazon Web Services. Mm-hmm. And a lot of apps are built on that, even Twitter, where Amazon is an east and a west instance. If the east shuts down, it goes to the west and the website still operates like normal.
So it's like a backup generator.
Exactly. So it's like a backup generator. And that's still a little ways out, but it's the ability that this is going to be present. And that's the best part, is that this will exist.
Is there any possibility that it could shut down again?
I mean, there's possibilities ETH could shut down.
Yeah.
Like, that's the crazy part, you know? Like, even L2s are shutting down. We just had Arbitrum go off for 45 minutes yesterday or 2 days ago, and no one talks about it. Like, Sol gets the hate because of how hard the community rallies when it's going well, that it's like, oh, we got to dunk on them back because they're crushing it, or these guys don't shut the hell up, so now we have to make them, you know? But that's kind of how it goes.
What do you think has been the driver to change that, you know, in the last, I'd say even in the last 4 months, that now there's, I mean, my timeline is full of Ethereum maxis now saying, hey, I want to buy my first NFT. I want to buy my first Sol coin. I'm just now exploring the Solana ecosystem. They went to Bitcoin before they came to Solana.
I think the change has just been that a lot of people wrote it off as like the VC scam chain. You know what I mean? And people thought that FTX and SBF were just propping this up. So obviously when price goes up, we always say it like NFTs look better when the price is up, which it's the same for chains. Chains are more interesting when there's more money and inflows and it feels like you have better opportunities to make money. We just saw the Jito airdrop where personally I made $22,000 on it, which is like surreal. Like, I've never gotten an airdrop that large just because I was using Jito, and I had a video from March where I was like, hey, stake some Sol here. It's like Lido, but on Sol. And that's all you had to do. Like, it was literally one step, and I had actually forgotten I had some wallets on it until I got the airdrop. And I was like, oh shit, this is crazy. And then people saw Jupiter, which is like Uniswap, and all the people who missed DeFi summer of 2020 with ETH are like, these same opportunities are oddly enough presenting themselves on Solana. Why would I not participate? And now all these people are like, okay, like, this makes sense. This is starting to make sense. The chain's not shutting off. Nobody left when FTX collapsed. If anything, people who had conviction doubled down, which was crazy to a lot of people, because it feels like now we're sitting here and it's like, oh, this is going to happen. You know what I mean? Yeah, so it feels good. It feels surreal. But I think a lot of people have now started to realize, like, okay, this is going well, and this is most likely going to continue to go well.
Yeah. So one of the cool things that I've observed is that people really are asking those type of questions, right? All right. So now here's the Solana ecosystem. Full now of people who have been in it for a minute. How in the world do I get started? Are they too late? And if so, how do they get started? Or if not, I guess, how do they get started? Where do they start looking? What are some of your favorites that you would recommend?
Yeah. So, I mean, if you're looking for like the airdrop side of things, where to go with that and what to do, I just look at like Kamino, which is like a liquidity provider, much like, I'm trying to think what's the main one on ETH. I think it is Uniswap, actually. It's like you can provide liquidity there. So Kamino is a really interesting one. I like MarginFi, which is a lending protocol, Marinade, which is also a validator and ways to do that. And then Parcel is the one that I'm most interested in, which is real estate. It's actual on-chain data for leverage trading real estate. So you can like go long San Francisco, short Los Angeles, or like long New York, short Miami. And it just gives a new interesting opportunity for traditional finance moves. And they just launched their point system. They just raised $9 million or $7 million. So it seems like that's going to end up having an airdrop that a lot of people are kind of sleeping on. And that's PARCL on Twitter. But there's still a bunch of opportunities. And I think with this recent craze, you're going to see more of these opportunities continue to present themselves, where people are finding new stuff and new protocols are going to launch as the growth on Solana continues to trend higher.
What's the mainstream attraction for a traditionally Web2 business to launch on Solana versus any other blockchain?
Well, I think right now it's the instant transactions and the growth that's happening. So like, it's a smooth process. It's really mobile friendly, which is incredible. And a lot of people sleep on that. Like, understanding that the mobile audience significantly outweighs the desktop audience is a vertical that you don't fully grasp, especially with ETH, because like MetaMask mobile is not very UI friendly, whereas Phantom mobile is. And some of those things for me, I'm like, it's starting to make sense and kind of shape up this world where you don't have to be at your desk to still participate as actively as you want to. Like, a cell phone's all you need, which is really a global opportunity because it's not specific to iPhone or Android. So anyone from any background can participate in this. And we saw it a lot during the bull, was like people from third world countries with an Android cell phone were getting allow lists and making life-changing money. And to me, I thought that was so fascinating because of how user-friendly the application and the ability to use Solana is. It just stands out. Like, I always say, like, my grandma could use a Phantom wallet if she really wanted to, you know? Like, it's a few clicks. And because you don't have to understand gas or like a stuck transaction and nonce canceling on ETH and all this other technical jargon, It's like you just press the button, you get a green check, and you're good to go.
I onboarded somebody, and I even posted about it. I onboarded a normie friend. I sent you a message about this because they wanted to spend more money, and I was like, let me just go with the lower ones. But I onboarded a normie friend into this that I never would have done on Ethereum NFTs, simply because this is a lot less friction involved, and it seemed like, all right, I can, you know, for that person, I can do this. I can actually take my phone. I don't have to go to my desktop. I can just do it on here. It's familiar enough that it didn't feel like this is scammy. This is way too technical for me. And so I was able to witness that firsthand, how cool it was. The other thing that I was able to witness was the initial reaction, switching topics, to the Bodago's art. Why did you choose that style of art?
Yeah, so I mean, I kind of got clowned for the art style. People were like, it's so childish, da-da-da, like, why did you go with this? And my argument's always been like, when you make something that's simple and easy to see and understand, like, it's a cute dog, you know what I mean? Like, it's based on the dog that's sitting right there, which is great. Like, it's based on this just friendly, happy little dog who sticks his tongue out all the time and waddles around. And I'm always like, dude, I haven't seen anything too crazy from a dog project in forever. Like, Gutter Dogs did great. Doge Pound was the first onboarding opportunity for many people, but it's since kind of faded. That's the thing, you know? And for me, I was like, how do we make something simple that we can go crazy on with doing more to the art? Because we have an in-house team of artists where we don't lose who the dog is. So by keeping it simple and friendly and easy to digest and easy to look at and just be like, oh, this thing's kind of cute. That was where our mindset went, was like, we don't really have many of these cute 2D PFPs on Solana. And something that a lot of people can look at and just think, oh, this is nice, you know? So that's what kind of led to it.
We actually don't have that many cute PFPs available at all in Web3.
Fair. I mean, I think like Sappy Seals, Pudgies, Cool Cats, which is also kind of in line with it. It's like the simple soft line drawing where I'm like, this just makes sense. Like, it's easy to look at, it's easy to understand, and it's not too detailed that you lose what it is.
A couple of years ago, I read an article that talked about the mom effect, right? And how for businesses to actually boom, and art styles, a lot of it having to do with NFTs, for anything for mainstream adoption, or for, you know, normal people adoption, it needs to be something that passes that mom test, that a mom will look at it and say, all right, this is safe enough to buy for my kid or to play in front of my kids, that is family friendly. Kleinosaurus does a really good job of that, right? Pudgy Penguins does a really good job of that. Bodago's does a really good job of that. Is that something that you guys also took into consideration?
I don't know if we called it the mom test. Yeah. You know, like for us, it was
I'm a mom. So that's exactly what I call it.
Yeah, exactly. So for us, it was more just like, how can someone look at this to not be too worried about it, or like have to really question what it is, or like overthink it, I guess, is kind of what we had. And sorry, Nick just gave me a call. I had to just message her back. It's like when we created this, we actually had really detailed art the first time around. That was more in line with the OK Bears, I guess you could call it, the like Bored Ape style, where it was like anatomically correct to a human, vertical, etc. And we scrapped it. I still love that art. And like we had multiple different dog breeds, which I thought would have been really cool to watch secondary action of like what breed was like a floor breed versus which one kind of caught a premium. And in turn, we were just like, we need to simplify this. Because simple, like, keep it simple, stupid was always the model that we kept going back to. We're like, we're overcomplicating it. We're overthinking it. What are we doing? Let's just dumb this down. And it's exactly what we did. And I think a lot of that came to like, how do we continue to grow IP in a way that we can get more detailed and make it still relatable? And that's kind of how we got to this. It was like, how can we let artists have their own free reign and interpretation without the need to make them have to do like some crazy interpretation of a heavily detailed piece?
That makes a lot of sense. I want to ask you a little bit about the story of Bodago's and the lore that goes along with it, right? Because being a part of the Nifty Portal and seeing the story build up, Cash City has a lot to do with Bodago's. But I've also heard commentary that's like, maybe it doesn't have as much to do with it because nobody really wants to go in and see it, right? And nobody really pays attention to the free NFTs, et cetera, et cetera. So tell us a little bit about like how that came up and did it change the thought now that you've had a minute to see how the reaction is going to be and what people pay attention to, et cetera? Because I think that lore and the dynamics of it, we tend to think that in Web3 that makes all of the difference, but truly, does it?
That's the toughest question, to be honest. Like, for us, it's like, the free NFTs are great. It's awesome when we have a partner on and we can do something cool for both communities. But at the same time, yeah, I think you kind of hit the nail on the head. Like, people just didn't really care. Mm-hmm. And that was a tough part, because like, we loved them. We think they're awesome. But then it's also like, we're injecting new NFTs into an ecosystem and almost have to, quote, like, provide utility to them to make people like feel like they're interested, to like a reason to collect those. Some people just love to collect, like, which helped with like daily active user numbers and stuff like that from a platform perspective. But to be completely transparent, with me, Nick, and Pio, we've had, me and Nick have spent multiple days of like 6 hours on the phone, just going back and forth on what the vision is and like path forward. And we've pivoted multiple times up until, I want to say recently, where it just kind of clicked for us. And we're like, we're good at content. Let's keep doing content. Let's keep crushing content and stop overthinking this. And that's really where it's like, we've kind of leaned into this, and it's like, content is our like bread and butter. And now I think our focus is way more on like, how do we actually help other content creators grow, scale, and continue to build out a network and really just help people in that capacity. Whereas the free NFTs were like, it's a collector community. We focused heavily on collecting, but it felt like it was an endless goal. You know what I mean? And that was very tough for us. Whereas now we have such defined goals and milestones that we're working towards. And it's also like, I get the question a lot, like, where's the roadmap? And like, it's very intentional why there isn't a roadmap. Like, very intentional. Like, coming from the space for 2 years, roadmaps kind of set you up, in my opinion, for failure. Whereas this gives us an opportunity to just ship things that we think the community will resonate with. Like that Bored Ape Kennel Dog that we have in the Pooch Points situation, mm-hmm. you know, points, pal, whatever we're calling it, the PPP. And like, that's something fun that we can spin up that like, we don't have to be tied to a roadmap. I think we have some really cool things, without leaking too much, that should be going live here in the near future. Obviously the holidays are always tough because not everyone's online, but I think we're going to have some really fun stuff come to light here in the next month or so.
How do you answer the never ending question of what's the utility? What am I getting out of it, right? As a founder in this space, I would imagine that that's one of the hardest things to constantly hear, that no matter how many times you bring something out and you are innovating every single day, people will constantly still continue to ask you, but what's the utility? What am I getting out of it?
Yeah, to be honest, it's like, it's tough. Mm-hmm. You know, it's tough. It's very tough. It's like, what am I getting out of it? What's the utility? What's the reason? I guess you're part of a community, you know, and you'll get things, what those things are. You'll have to wait and see. But it's like, I've always thought utility is just kind of whack. It's like such a buzzword. Yeah. And I feel like at the end of the day, utility is what you make it. And like, we have a great active Discord that was hyperactive during the bear market. And there's not many people that can say the same. And to me, that's utility. Like, people who are still in the space being active and participating. Collaborative ideas, collaborative conversation, and excitement about the space, finding new opportunities. And it's not many places that you get that. You know what I mean? And it felt awesome to see people be like, this is the most active Discord I've seen during the bear market. And it was like, that was always the goal. Like, that was always the goal. It was like, we built this for 2 years with nobody else, or no like token gated, and nobody else kind of like interfering in that capacity. It was wide open for people to just join and participate. And that in itself is utility. And now it's like, the content to an extent is, and I guess like, you could call what we're going to eventually roll out utility, but I hate that word. And I always tell people like, the utility is you get an awesome dog PFP, go crazy, and you get access to a great group of people.
You really do. I can vouch for that. You really do. And the Discord and the chat has always been a very tight knit community, and always active and always full of like finding the next opportunity. So I want to pivot a little bit and ask you about that, right? There's been so many groundbreaking opportunities in Solana, just period around all of them. How do you do your research? What do you look for?
Yeah, so how do I do my research is a tough question, because it's like, I see something on Twitter and I'm just like, this looks interesting. Let's go look into it. So like, I saw Eigenlayer and Celestia pop up a couple months ago. And just by seeing the names, then it's like, I just go and start Googling. Like, as crazy as it sounds, it's that simple. I'm just like Googling the name, finding their Twitter, reading the docs they have, looking for social sentiment and like what other people are posting, looking for threads that I can get more information on. going to YouTube and watching videos that are out there, whether it's someone who has 5 views of video or 100,000. It's like, I'm always just trying to get information and just so I can start to develop my own thesis. And that's the big thing for me is like, normally when I see the whole Twitter timeline talking about something, I'm like, oh, okay, this is dead in the water. Like, if everyone's talking about it, it's not alpha anymore at all. But if you're one of few people talking about it, now you're onto something. And if you have conviction in it, then it's like, okay, now I really want to get involved and like figure out what's happening here, how I can be early to something. But yeah, it's mostly just like, as crazy as it sounds, I'll see like a small page post about something that they think's cool or that they're watching. And I'm like, oh, I'm interested in this. And maybe I don't like what it is. And it's 10, 15 minutes wasted. But like, I learned something. And now I actually have reasons as to why, if someone asks why I don't like it. Like, I think being able to do research and write something off as why you don't want to be involved with it is just as valuable as finding alpha and putting out a post about why you're bullish on it. Because now it's like it leads to further conversation and dialogue. And maybe my negative thesis can be swayed by positive responses from other people. And like, that's the best part.
99% of the participants in any blockchain find out about things when everyone is already talking about it, right? And it could be, and it is true, 100%. You're already late to it. But how do they transition to being one of those early people? Where do you find these people? How do you see that? You know, like my timeline isn't full of new people that only have a couple of hundred followers, because I would assume that those are the ones that not everybody has seen yet, right? So how do you get to those people?
It's tough. And I guess part of it too, as crazy as it sounds, is like it's a blessing and a curse to have followers on social media, because you get a lot of responses and a lot of DMs. And like, I'm really bad with DMs on Twitter, so I apologize for people who have reached out. Like, I have to comb through them and I try to like block off a couple hours once a week to just like knock out a bunch of stuff, and I still miss stuff. But you get a response from people, and like, because if you watch my Twitter like feed and my posts, a lot of it is trying to be like educational. Like, I really do value sharing education and like things I'm interested in with actual reason. And like when I shared HiveMapper and Helium yesterday, somebody responded with another product I had not heard of. And I can't remember the name now, but I went and looked at it. It wasn't US based, so I didn't do as much research into it. But it's stuff like that where like, if I see a really good thread from a person with like 600 comments, I'll click on it and just go look at the comments, find someone who's like mentioned something in there. And meme coins, I don't look at all. Because that's the one where I'm like, dude, everyone's just shilling their bag. But when you see a good post about someone who's like, I'm interested in these L2s or these airdrops, and someone comments, oh, these ones are great, have you looked into? And that you click on the page, it's a Twitter with 20,000 followers for that protocol. The person who shared it has 500 followers. I'm like, this person may actually have some alpha. So I end up going and doing some research. But like, Twitter is great because it's not walled conversations. Like, I can see what other people are talking about without having to be involved in the conversation. And part of that is just going to bigger pages who are sharing stuff that they're doing. Like, even Beanie has shared some like great trades recently. And you'll click on it and see comments of people who are talking about other gaming projects when he was talking about Sugartown and Zynga. And then I can go look at them and like research. Or listening into spaces are also great, especially the ones that like a lot of people kind of sleep on that have 20, 30 listeners. Sometimes have some of the best alpha, because those people are genuinely just chopping it up about things they think are cool or interesting. And you'd go hop in, you listen, and all of a sudden you're down a rabbit hole of a protocol you've never heard of on an L3 that's in a wallet you don't even know where to download. And you're like, this friction could be an opportunity. So that's where I go, is like, I look at a lot of other conversations. I look at a lot of spaces that are much smaller, just because those smaller spaces are literally just like many times friends just talking about stuff they're interested in. And it's like cool to be a fly on the wall for those.
100%. For a minute there, I was starting to do space quotes. And it was that exact same thesis, you know, that no one has the time to go in to listen to all of the spaces that go on every day. What you want is a TLDR of all of those things that you potentially missed. I think I'm going to have to go back to that, because you're absolutely right. I think that's key. All right. So like an alpha here that I have learned is to go in and look at the replies that Easy has on his feed to the videos that he already made. And then
some of those are really good, is the thing. Like, it sounds crazy, especially like I have an airdrop video going out on YouTube, I think like in a couple days. But even if you go and look at my airdrop thread from a few days ago, there's some really good comments in there of stuff that I missed. And people are like, what are your thoughts on this? I've been farming this. Why didn't you mention it? And it leads me to go and actually research it to be like, why didn't I mention that? Or why had I not found information on it? So like some of the best responses are people's actual input on something that's not a meme coin to like a well thought out thread or like a well thought out long form post. Because when you have someone who's read the whole post and then responds with like, oh, these are great, but also I'm doing XYZ, really good stuff. Like I love Hunter Solaire, if you're familiar with him on Twitter.
Yeah.
His threads really and posts are incredible. And his responses are even better. He has a really good audience of people that are just sharing feedback on stuff. The gaming side of things, there's this guy, Jay Lettuce Wrist, that I'm not sure if you're familiar with. Once again, though, Jay's an absolute legend. Guy has 940 followers, which is grossly undervalued for the level of quality he puts out. It's like some of my favorite gaming content ever.
Wow.
It's, all of it is just like news-related stuff, raises and announcements of like game raises for funding. And he's on it. And then the thing is, like, his posts don't get a ton of engagement, but he's always early on stuff. And I love talking to him because he always gives me like new information and sheds a new light on something really cool or interesting that I hadn't found before. And I'm like, these are the things that I value a ton, because it's like, I get a lot of questions like, what are you buying? And I'm just like, dude, if I'm buying it, I'm already probably too late and I can't publicly post it, because then it's just like gives me my exit. And that's so annoying. Like, I'd rather, like, I miss the days when I could post trades with an exit target and then it would play out over like a week. Now it's like, I have to like use alt wallets and stuff just to buy things that I actually have conviction in so that people aren't copy trading, which is so frustrating to me.
Yeah. And now you definitely can't mention it. And you want to do, it's a catch 22 because you want to educate, right? And you want to talk about it, but you can't talk about it.
Well, that was the thing with Parsel, was I told everyone, I was like on Space, I was like, Parsel, they have an NFT. It's too sold. They just announced a $7 million raise and no one's buying the NFT. I'm buying 20. And I bought them on Spaces after I said it. And then I was like, and my target exit is 10 SOL. When they get to 10 SOL, I will be selling. Like, I have to be hyper transparent. They hit 10, scaled out, they retraced to 8, and then went to 18. And like my comments then were like, you sold too early, paper hands, da 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 da. But I'm like, dude, if these things pumped to 10, I sold and went to 4, all the comments would have been like, you dumped on us, you dumped on us. So like, I prefer you to tell me I have paper hands, the trade thesis worked out. But like, it's situations like that that take like a week to play out. And when they do, it feels great. And a lot of the comments are like, hey, thanks for the insight, thanks for the trade. And sometimes those comments too are just like, hey, have you looked at this? It's similar, but for a different real world asset, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. What do you think about ordinals?
They're really interesting. But that's about all I got on them. I'm fascinated with them because ZK is a good friend. So I've talked to him a lot about them. I have Bunny's Ape inscribed at like 72K or something like that. Mm-hmm. It's like 71K is like a joke I did. So it's cool because that's sub 100K on a Sparrow wallet that I don't even know where that Sparrow wallet is at this point. So he's on there. And it's actually part of like the 10K Bored Apes ordinals or whatever, which is so funny that it got included because it was one of the first ones. But that was another one. I just wanted to try it out. And when ZK was calling me like, dude, just start inscribing. We had inscribed a bunch of Bitcoin punks was what we were inscribing at the time. And I had a great trade on those. Like, they ended up going up to 1.5 ETH, which led me to learn how to use Emblem Vault and like what a wrapped asset is and all this like really cool stuff I had never taken time to do before. And it gave me some really cool information and insight. I think ordinals are here forever. I don't think they're ever going to leave, but I think they're going to be for a special group of collectors, in my opinion, versus like the day trading JPEGs that are Solana and Ethereum. I think ordinals will be for some of the higher end art stuff, like what Yuga has with 12 Fold, I think is a really cool use case. Bugatti's eggs, I think, are really cool and stuff like that. OMB, that's just, it's a culture, it's a movement. That's fascinating to watch ZK crush with that. It's been one of the coolest things to watch on the sidelines. I have a Green Eyes, so I've just had exposure to it since Mint, just because like I said, he's been a friend. But it's been awesome to watch him navigate a project after watching where he came from with D-Gods and everything else.
Coinbase, Brian Armstrong just posted a video in which he mentioned it 9 times, right? Inscriptions are going crazy right now. Do you foresee, like, do you think that you're going to be looking more research, at least research into it in 2024?
So the thing is, like, I've done my research into it. We do these streams once a month where we go through like upcoming projects. So like, I'm familiar with like Bitcoin Sparks gaming project on Bitcoin, which I'm really interested in. We talked about Trevor Owens, Bitcoin Ninjas, which Trevor Owens is an investor in the Nifty. So we're all huge fans of him, and I think he's going to crush. We looked at like Node Monkeys and things like that. So I'm very familiar with the space and like keep tabs on it, but I just don't actively participate.
Yeah.
That's the thing. And like, I always keep a pulse on these ecosystems. Like, I even have, like, I keep a pulse on like AVAX NFTs just because I like to stay up on like emerging markets, and ordinals are still emerging. Whereas like ETH is still kind of just been this old NFT market at this point, as funny as it sounds to be 2 years and be called old, but I'm fascinated with it. But for me, it's just more difficult to navigate multiple ecosystems with like time management right now.
Yeah.
So I'd rather just check up on things and see how mints are going and like keep tabs on like what the exciting new mint is, even if I don't have a lot list, just to see how the market's trading it. Yeah. Because that to me is more of like a valuable insight. And then dashboards. I use Dune Analytics and Flipside are the two dashboard tools that I use to just monitor all markets. And you can get data on Ordinals, Solana, ETH, AVAX, you name it. And just see like, are daily active users going up? Is volume going up? Is location-based data kind of running? Like BRC20s blew up in the East because Gate.io and OKX listed them. So that was like really interesting to me to watch like the Eastern money flow in to Ordinals and BRCs.
What's Flipside? I haven't heard of that one.
Yeah, so Flipside Crypto is what it's called. It's similar to Dune and all custom kind of dashboards. It was really big with Solana stuff for a while because I guess their API calls were a little bit easier to use in Flipside than Dune. But now they have stuff for like Eigenlayer, which is an L2 that I've been aggressively farming. And just saw $600 million in increased TVL, which I saw from that dashboard. I was like, damn, that's crazy. Dang. Yeah. So like I just use it for data mostly. And it's like really friendly graphs. So I can just look at it. I'm a visual learner. I have to learn by doing or look at something. So it helps me see like, are numbers going up, numbers going down, user numbers, volume numbers, all that fun stuff.
You actually learn simultaneously. Like one of the things that I think is hilarious that I have seen, right, is you're hosting a space, you're talking in this space, but you're also chatting on Discord and you're also replying to DMs and you're also reading this and you're also doing that. And I'm like, how do you do that?
I have really bad ADHD. It got me in a lot of trouble growing up because like everyone would be like, you're not paying attention. And I'd repeat exactly what they said right back to them. And they'd be like, well, you're distracting somebody else. Cause like, that's what would be happening. Yeah. It's like, I can listen and multitask. It's just how my brain works. If I'm not doing multiple things at once, it drives me insane. Like everyone's always fascinated, but for me, it's like, I hate idle time. Mm-hmm. It's like lines are my least favorite thing. So like I hate amusement parks because I hate waiting in line.
Yeah.
That is the one that like, if I could get rid of one thing in the world, obviously you'd go for like world hunger and all these other things. Besides
the
that,
really
besides
bad
that,
thing. Yeah.
Like besides the really bad things, it'd be lines, like no lines. Like I just hate wasted time. Like I value time so much and I try to use every second I can. And that's what's kind of led to the multitasking, which gift and a curse.
Yeah.
Because there's certainly like, if I'm hyper-focused on something, I can knock it out really quickly. If I'm not, and I'm doing multiple things, then it leads me to like slowly get through all of it, but it is much slower.
One of the things that I talk about a lot on the show is the magic, if you will, of Web3, or that Web3 allows content creators. And I wanted to talk to you about it too. I mean, as far as content creation, you have been killing it. You're partnering with absolutely everybody. I mean, every day it seems like you have a new partner that you're doing videos with, right? For people who are just coming, for people that still have 9-to-5s, or for people that are still in school, you know, Solana ecosystem, I notice, has a lot of younger type of people who are looking for those dreams, not just hitting it big, but also working in the industry, right? Doing content creation, learning about it, doing things that allows them to work from home and do the things that you do. What are some advice that you would give to a person like that?
So I love that question because I never thought I would be making content, like ever. That was the craziest part. A lot of people are like, have you been doing this before Web3, all this stuff? I'm like, no. Like I worked a normal job. I did tech consulting. I was traveling like 40 out of 52 weeks a year to go to companies and like do software consulting for like their Fortune 500s and like all this stuff. And because the company was based 2 hours behind me in Mountain Time when I was living on the East Coast, it was easy for me to tune into the morning show before my work day would actually start, which led me to like start tuning in every day and waking up a little earlier and trading and all this stuff. And for me, I was still working a full-time job while doing everything with the Nifty up until July of 22, which is crazy to a lot of people.
Oh, it's crazy. I remember when you announced it, it was like, wait, what? You've been working this entire time? How is that even possible?
Mm-hmm. Which everyone was shocked about. Yeah. Just because like, I think when you're passionate about something and you love what you do, it doesn't feel like work. So like, I would find myself up to like 2 a.m. just reading or researching or tweeting or listening to spaces or like filming a video because I was like, this is fun. Like, it doesn't feel like work. It's enjoyable. And to me, that was the biggest thing where I realized like, I was slowly fading out of my job just like not enjoying it as much as I had been the first couple of years. My boss at the time, when I told him I was putting my 2 weeks in, he's like, I totally get it. Like, you've still been doing an incredible job, but like the passion has clearly like faded. He's like, we would never fire you because you're still doing it amazing. But you used to have like a different level of like burn in your belly that made you really want to just keep going like above and beyond. He's like, you've been doing great, but like, I could tell something else was happening. He's like, and he asked me, he's like, is this what you want to do? I told him the whole situation. I was like, yeah. I was like, I want to take the risk. Like, I'm still young. I've quit at 27, 28, just turned 30. So I was just like, if it fails and blows up in my face, like, so at least I tried, you know? And sure enough, it hasn't. We're still going strong. So I think if you're in the space and want to try to make this like a full-time gig, the biggest thing I would say is like, devote time each day, whether you get up an hour earlier or stay up an hour later, and take that time to try to get closer to that goal, whether it's making videos, posting Twitter threads, taking 10 minutes during your lunch break if you still have a job and doing the same thing. Because the big thing for me is like, when people ask, how do I start? My one answer every single time is just hit record. Like, just press the record button and start. And don't overthink it, because you're not going to be good the first time. I watched some of my videos like way back when I started. It's awful. Like, I'm terrible. And I think it's so funny. I'm like, dude, what the hell is that? Like, who watched this shit? Because it's bad. And now I'm like, okay, my personality comes out a little bit more. We have a little bit more fun with it. And it's just repetition. It's like anything. It's like you spend 10,000 hours on something to become an expert. And until then, the only way to do it is to start, and eventually you'll get better. And that's the big thing, is like, if your goal is to get better at something, just keep trying. And the other thing is like, you will lose money. Like, in this market, you will lose money. Like, plain and simple, you will lose money. And everyone says, don't use money you can't afford to lose. The way I look at it is like, don't use money that will cripple you financially, because like, you're going to lose that money. And obviously, like, most people can't afford to lose any dollar. Mm-hmm. But it's like, if you're investing in anything, you expect to lose it at least the first 24 months. Like, just write it off. Don't even think about it, because it'll make the emotional trading way better.
Say a word or two about emotional trading, if you will.
Oh, yeah, that's it's chaos. It's emotional trading is hands down the worst thing you can do. Because when you lose big and you try to chase, you're going to lose more. The one rule of advice that I can give is, if you made a trade and you're really upset about how the outcome went, you feel like you sold too early and you watched it 10,000x after and you could have made $100,000, or you put in $5,000, even if you put in $100, you put in $50 and you lost it all, and it stings, it hurts, and you're sitting there like, I will get this money back. Walk away from the desk, get up, go do anything else, fire up video games, read a book, go outside, lay in the grass, do something. If it snows, go lay in the snow, like anything besides sitting at your desk. And I mean that with the most honest and sincere approach. Just get away from the desk, because you will lose more money. It's just how the game goes. And until you can get back to be level-headed and learn about why you lost money, or why the trade did what you weren't expecting it to do, or why you made a mistake, your emotions will mess with you significantly more than having a level and conscious head in this market, in any markets. Like, I always think about it too, is like, when I have a tough decision to make, if I wear a Whoop, which is like an Aura ring, but like a bracelet, if I look at that and my heart rate is elevated and I have a tough decision to make, I'll literally just go and do like breathing exercises before I make a decision. Because like, it's gotten to me to a point where like, I have to be focused on a tough decision before, and like, weigh the pros and cons. And I know if I have an elevated heart rate, I'm not thinking logically, my body's stressed, and I could make a poor decision. So like, when it comes to like tough decisions, big swings, things like that, if the heart rate skies after, that's too late. Like, clearly I'm stressed about the move I just made. But if I can consciously decide where a decision goes, I try to do everything in my power to like calm the emotions and think really logically about it. Because that's the only way to find success, in my opinion, is like to have that level head.
That's wild. Normally when a person reaches that commitment, that understand, that self-awareness, it's because they made a mistake in the history, right? In the past. It's because they learned a lesson they don't want to do. Tell us that story.
I've told the story a few times. I ran $15,000 to 640K, 620, and 2016 to 18. The day after Christmas, I lost everything. I had $30 to my name. I got liquidated leverage trading back in like the ICO days, which was crazy. I thought I was like untouchable. I was working like a shitty sales job and not even doing the job, like just trading shit coins and ICOs at my desk at the time and just getting by. And I remember it was the day after Christmas when I got the margin call email, And I still remember, I still have the email. Like that's how heavily it affected me, is I still have that email. That's like, you've been liquidated. Like, please close the account. I was like, holy shit. Like, it went from the highest high I've ever been on to like, you can't say anything to me. I'm this 23-year-old kid with over $500,000 in internet money. Like, I felt like I was above anybody and was like, it was terrible. And then when I lost it all, it was like this revelation. I remember laying in bed for like 3 weeks. I'd like called out sick and said I was like really sick. Used all my sick time like right at the start of the new year. It was terrible. And then finally like woke up one day and was like, what the hell am I? You're wasting time. And that's like where my identification of like how much I valued time kind of clicked in. Cause I was like, the only way to get back up is to just go back and do it again and learn from this and like start to self-reflect. And it's like the hardest thing, but it really hit me to be like, you have to be self-aware of, you caused this. Like, you could have taken any amount off at any point and been okay, and you didn't. And that was your fault, your decision, your choice. And that for me was where I was like, okay. And even this past cycle, like I was really aggressive at taking profits, and everyone always called, like I had it in my bio, it was like a take profit maxi for the longest time, intentionally, because I was, and for me, it was always like, if you make a winning trade, take 60% to your bank account, keep the 40% and use it and keep rolling it, is how I kept trading it. So I recognized a lot of good profits, but even now, like for that, it could have been more, you know, and that's what I always think about, but I'm like, it doesn't matter because I still made money, which is better than a lot of people could say. Mm-hmm. And now it's like, what am I going to do this cycle? Now it's like less trades, more conviction. And I keep a small bag that like, I've basically written it off as if it's going to zero, just to like keep the itch of like, don't blow this money you've been working so hard and doing so well with, and still make sure you're like mentally good to go with it. But yeah, it's a lot of self-reflection. Sorry for the ramble.
No, I love it. I love it because, you know, we tend to think that the people that we see that have made it, and you by every freaking definition, Easy, have made it in the space. We tend to think that those people that we see on these videos, on these spaces, you know, the that are at the forefront of it, have never made those detrimental mistakes, right? That are always winning, because that's all that they talk about. The wins behind the wins behind the wins. And it's so important to realize that we're human beings and that we make those mistakes, and that sometimes those mistakes is what teach us and put that fire under our ass to make sure that we don't make those mistakes again, right?
I try to show my losses too. Like, I had posted my worst losses of the year from a Sniper's Discord. They have like a chart that'll show it. And I was like, I don't always win. Like, I always try to hammer home that I lose, because like, there's not many people who do. There's not many people who own it. Like, dude, I made a terrible trade and just lost 10 grand. You know what I mean? Like, and if you can show that, it makes people realize you're human, which I think is a big part of like this whole, all of us behind the internet, that a lot of people kind of overlook. It's like, we are all still human. We all make mistakes, and we all still need to figure out like what that future kind of holds, you know? And like, it is in your power and in your choices to figure it out and make mistakes, but it's not always a mistake. It's more a lesson. That's what I always remind myself. It's like, when something bad happens or I do something dumb, I look at it as more of a lesson than a loss, because that like helps me compartmentalize it and figure out what it is.
A lesson. I love that. Thank you for sharing that with us, because I think that that's so important. That's so important. At the end of this year, like December, here we are, December 2023, having gone through, if you are still here, if you are still watching, if you are still participating, granted, a lot of people left and came back, but most likely you were here in 2022, maybe, right? You were making money. Then you lost a shitload of money. We all collectively did. Lost a shitload of money, went through the bear, and are just now starting again. So the majority of us are looking at it as an, oh, here we go. You know, ETFs are about to be approved. Bitcoin halving is about to come early next year. Solana is kicking back up. My normie friends are starting to text message me again. Here we are positioning ourselves for this win again. Well, what happens if you don't make those wins? What happens if you make mistakes along the way? So that's a really good way of preparing ourselves, I think, mentally.
Mm-hmm. That's a big thing, is like, yeah. You just got to look at it and just realize like, it's not a loss, it's a lesson, and keep reminding yourself that and take something away from it. Because if you can gain value or education from something, was it really a loss? And that's the thing I always remind myself of, is like, if I make a bad trade, what did I do wrong? If I make a good trade, what did I do right? And like, I would write them down, like literally write them down constantly. I had a notebook front to back completely filled of just like this trade, this date, what I bought in at, what I sold at, and why I won or why I lost. And it really helped me hone in to eliminate the emotion side of things, because that's like where most people end up losing it. And that's, I have a lot of conversations about that, is like the people who are making insane money many times lose it all because mm-hmm. they just keep chasing. And mm-hmm. it's like, until that money's in your bank account, have you really won? You know what I mean? And like, that to me is the big realization I had going into the NFT cycle, was I need to recognize this when I didn't in 16 to 18. And now this cycle's like, okay, I'm well positioned. It's the first time I say it all the time, like, I'm definitely overinvested in crypto, but I'm comfortably overinvested, and I want to be uncomfortable by the time the full bull runs here, because like I have this level of conviction and I understand the risk, but I don't care when the price goes down for the first time in history. Yeah. Like, I don't wake up and look at down price as a bad thing. I look at it as a buying opportunity. And that mentality shift was like the biggest win for me personally. And it wasn't even monetary. It was just like a realization.
What's your portfolio allocation? How much do you have in stable coins and altcoins?
Right now it's about 35% in stables, 65% in crypto. 60% in crypto, 5% in NFTs. So my NFT exposure is really small, but that's still my favorite vertical to trade. It's like, that's the degen bag that I try to compound underside gains for. Of that 60%, 70s in Solana, 20% in AVAX, 5% in Bitcoin, and 5% in Celestia. So I keep it really simple, like 4 tokens. And that leaves room. I've been trying to keep it to no more than 5. And if I want to add a 6th, I have to get rid of 1, is like how I look at it. So I don't have to monitor a ton of stuff. And the reason being, like, Celestia is my big alt, like, risk play. Like, that's the one where I'm like, this has the highest upside potential, but could theoretically also go to 0. Bitcoin's just like the leader, and I've been holding Bitcoin for a while. I have 0 ETH exposure, which people think is crazy.
Wow.
But it's just like, for me, just like, yeah, I say 0, but I think I have like an ETH and a hot wallet that I trade with. Like, my ledger money is what I'm talking about here.
Okay. Yeah.
70% SOL, which is like my massive bag. But in 6 days, it'll be exactly a year of DCAing every single day, which is crazy. Like, that's like the surreal moment to me, is like, I'll have 365 consecutive days of buying Solana.
Wow.
And that was like the goal. Yeah. That was the goal, was like, buy this and don't stop until it hits $100, and then only buy on red days. And then AVAX is like my altcoin play that I'm like, this one feels like it's going to have the most potential upside for secondary things.
Do you allow yourself to celebrate those wins?
Rarely. When I exit the Solana bag, I'll keep 10% forever. It's just like, so I'll always have exposure. When I start exiting, once that final sale goes through, I'll celebrate a little bit. Because then it's like,
how does Easy celebrate?
Probably have a pizza. Yeah. Like, I haven't drank in a long time. I had stopped drinking when Thread Guy beat me in 1-on-1. Mm-hmm. I realized how out of shape I was. And I was like, I got to fix my life. You know, like, I had posted at like 12:05 a.m. these goals I had for the new year. It was like, get 1 million views on YouTube, get 10,000 subs, have a video go viral. I think the other one was like, get back into a workout routine, which I finally did like over the last 4 months, and then be happy, which is like, obviously we're still working towards the last one, everyone is, but the other ones, like, I hit the 1 million views. I didn't hit 10K subs, but that was also kind of like my own fault. I had slowed down on some video content on YouTube to help restructure and like figure out the best path forward for it. And I think next year I'll be able to do it, but it was really cool for the first time to continue to go back and look at this and like post quarterly updates on it. Like, here I am, this is what's happening. But celebration wise, yeah, probably just eat some good food, eat a cheat meal. That's about it. Nothing crazy. Like, I'll eat a cheat meal, help my mom with some money, as I always have and always want to, pay off student loans. Who knows? I'd go on a nice trip, maybe. Mm-hmm. I haven't really thought too much about it. I know it'll happen, but until it happens, that's it.
Nice. And I have a hard stop right now. What are your goals for 2024? And how can we support you in that?
Yeah, so it's 10K on YouTube for sure. I think the other thing is, the other one was like, have the dogs be the number one Solana collection. And in my heart, they are, you know, but like, it's tough to say with monetary value where people mm-hmm. rank it. And that's always the toughest part. And to me, maybe we got there just seeing the Gordon buy, which kind of gave us a level of legitimacy, which was mm-hmm. surreal. That feels like a win, you know, mm-hmm. But it's just going to be continue to win with the people around me, continue to be happy, continue to watch the Nifty become the leading media company in the space. And I think next year it's also travel, enjoy life a little bit more than I have previously, and check some things out, go on more of these conferences, meet new people, and grow the ecosystem that we have of these just incredible people that participate every day and show up every day, rocking the dogs and rocking with us, and give back to them above all else.
As a person who has been following you since literally day one, I am incredibly proud of you. As a mom who is half degen, half responsible, I am incredibly proud of you, Easy. I hope that you know that there are so many of us who are watching you and, you know, have watched you grown up so much, and we could not be more proud of you. So thank you for letting us be, you know, going along with that journey with you. Good luck with
everything.
I'm so
grateful for you guys rocking with us. And you've been here since the start, Bill. So thank you. And thanks for having me on. This conversation's been incredible. I know we said we were going to talk Solana Alpha, but it kind of just became Life Alpha, you know?
No better way. Yes, that's right. Hey, everybody needs that Life Alpha every once in a while, right?
Exactly. So thank you for having me. I appreciate it. Thank you.
All right, everybody. That's it for today's show. Thank you so much for joining us. I pinned up on the top how you can follow the instructions to make sure that you get today's Space Cap Po app. We do this show, if you know, every single Wednesday at 2 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. So if you didn't know, now you know. I'll see you guys on the flip side. Thanks, everybody. Bye.